I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubble gum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello, and welcome to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast, where we are still doing February. And so you're getting some of the whitest guys alive talking about blaxploitation movies. So with me today, I've got Marty and Brandon.
Hello.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Okay.
Been better, but excited to talk about these movies.
Yeah, well, you guys did one already. I missed the Jim Kelly episode.
No, you missed it. Those are some good movies.
I've seen Black Samurai before.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I enjoy it. It's my kind of trash. It has one of my favorite lines when he's like, "Never the white knight, baby."
Yeah,
but that was, I guess, two blaxploitation movies made by white folks. Especially like Trashator. I forgot his name. Al Adamson, the guy who made 500 movies, and Robert Close, the worst director of all time. this week we're talking about two movies decided to do by a black filmmaker, namely a double feature of Ivan Dixon's only two theatrically released films, Trouble Man and The Spook Who Sat by the Door.
Yeah.
Ivan Dixon, for those not familiar, he got into Hollywood as a stunt double for Sidney Poitier on The Defiant Ones, I think. And then they became friends and got along. And a lot of his like early roles with Sidney Poitier got him like parts in A Raisin in the Sun and A Patch of Blue. And then, of course, his most famous acting stint was, because he started as an actor, was Four Seasons of Hogan's Heroes. Where he was.
Who can forget?
I used to watch Hogan's Heroes, actually.
Okay.
Reruns for some reason. That was, I don't know, it got to be like 24 years ago now or something. 23 years ago. Norway was like, you know what we need? We need Hogan's Heroes reruns. That's the one. So every week after. We didn't have Sunday school, but we had like Sunday school, but it was like on a Wednesday night. So I grew up in a small religious village. So, every Wednesday after Sunday school on Wednesday, we'd go home and watch Hogan's Heroes reruns.
Just as the Bible commands.
Yeah, it's one of my, I don't know, my weird relationships with American shows and like, what have I seen? Oh, I've seen Hogan's Heroes for some reason. Hogan's Heroes and Bonanza. That was the shit. Yeah, he played King Choli there for like 150 episodes. One of the first black actors to have like a starring role on a TV show, basically. But he quit after four seasons because he felt he wasn't doing anything. Like, nobody was really acting there. And probably Bob Crane was too busy being off banging hookers or whatever. Fucking sex freak. Bob Crane was a freak. And then he sort of went into directing during the 70s, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Tired of acting. And then he did these two movies and a couple of television movies. I watched two of the later ones he did. The Sty of the Blind Pig, which is just a film theater show. It's like nothing. It's like two rooms, very, I don't know, film theater. I don't know if you guys have that. We had this thing called like the television theater, which was always, it was just filmed theater shows. It's like ran for like 40 seasons.
No, I can't say I'm familiar with that.
And then he did like a his last movie he directed is called Percy and Thunder. It's like a made-for-TV boxing movie with Courtney B. Vance. Is that his name? That's the young boxer, and James Earl Jones is his manager, and Billy Dee Williams is like doing a Don King. Nothing special. And then he directed television episodes mostly, including the final episode of the Robert Ginty Show, Hawaiian Heat.
Oh.
One of the few episodes you can watch, because it's like half of the episodes of that show is missing because it was not a good show and nobody cared. the only episodes that survive are because someone recorded them off the television in the 80s. So they accidentally kept them. But the reason I knew who he is and got interested in him because he directed 13 episodes of Magnum P.I.
Wow.
Which I think is the second most of any director. And that's another American TV show that for some reason I was really into as a kid.
Hmm.
And I did not grow up in either the 60s or the 80s. So why these shows were on TV when I was a kid, I don't know.
Cause it's we not had like, Magnum P.I. when I was growing up, but I didn't really watch it.
It's too bad it rules.
We had TV Land, which is like a retro television program network, but I don't recall Magnum P.I. being on it.
I mean, you in the U.S., you have like 200 television channels.
You're not lying.
We had like four, and then it's like, why did one of them decide to show Magnum P.I. in 2009? Yeah, so he was one of like two directors I'd always noticed when they were doing an episode. It's probably just because of the name, also like the combination of like Tsarist Russian and Southern sounding name combination of Ivan Dixon.
Yeah.
The other name that always stuck out was one guy called John Llewellyn Moxley, which is just obviously you'd notice that name. It's really long. Maybe I just noticed directors with X in their name. Yeah, but he did like 9 episodes of Rockford Files, I think, and some Greatest American Hero. Those are like the ones where he did like several episodes of the show. If you're out there looking for auteurist stamps of the eye of Ivan Dixon, there's 9 episodes of Rockford Files you can go watch after this, and 7 episodes of The Waltons.
Oh,
that's like the really wholesome Western show.
Yeah.
Anyway, in 1972 and 1973, he made 2 blaxploitation movies, which were both quite well regarded. So it's kind of weird that, well, it's not that weird when we get to the second movie and it's politics that why he wasn't allowed to make anymore, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got too uppity, Ivan.
Oh.
Don't upset the white folks.
Yes.
But first off, we have Trouble Man, starring Robert Hooks as Mr. T.
Great name. Great legacy of the name. Sorry, I just love Mr. T. The real Mr. T. But I do like the character Robert Hooks. He's pretty much like this perfect gangster individual who's like, he can play pool, he can kill people, he does it all. He's Mr. T. I mean, great name.
Yeah, I guess the T stands for trouble.
Oh,
I don't know. He's sort of like a problem solver, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When people got trouble, they come to him. What's the first person that comes to him is that like the some lady fell down some stairs and is in the hospital.
Oh yeah, her baby's in the hospital.
Was that the second problem someone came to him with? I don't remember exactly, but they come to him with stuff like that, and then he just goes and like leans on it.
Mm-hmm.
And fixes it, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's all around, all around cool cat.
Oh, Mr. T's a cool dude.
Yeah. You say he's like a pool hustler. He's smart dressed, drives a fancy car. He's got his own Marvin Gaye theme song.
Yeah.
He isn't even a pool hustler. Somebody just challenges him to a pool duel, and he keeps his cool better than the other guy, so he wins.
Yeah.
He isn't hustling him.
No, I guess not. He's just really good at pool, also.
Yeah, because he keeps his cool. And that's the movie's theme. It's all about keeping your cool.
Yeah, talking about the Waltons, if you want to see the dad from the Waltons drop the N-bomb a couple of times. He plays the movie's main bad guy.
Oh.
Yeah, Ralph White. He's still alive. No, he died in 2014. I just saw he was credited on Bones. So I was like, oh, is he alive? But I guess Bones, they don't even make Bones anymore.
Maybe they do. It's been on for a while.
Yeah, they never cancel shows anymore. Just bring him back.
Nothing left with the cast of Bones, just Bones.
Keep making it. It's the titular role, and finally they can play it. They died of old age in season 89. Every show is The Simpsons now. Nothing gets canceled. Yeah, then we get Paul Winfield. It's a pimp. Chalky the pimp. Comes to Mr. T and it's like, someone is ripping me off and I need your help. Can you just basically come and sit in on this card game and help me muscle it if it goes bad?
It's a dice game, isn't it? A dice game. Against the wall. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just, my brain is filling in the gaps with the first thing I think of.
I don't blame you.
I had to pause the movie because, like, Paul Winfield, I know him from something. He has such a familiar face, but I just could not put my finger on it.
Is it is it not Wrath of Khan?
He is in it. That's not what I knew him from. I think it was Mars Attacks mostly that I remembered him from.
Oh, Terminator. He's in the Terminator.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he plays the other cop. That's not Lance Henriksen.
Okay.
He's in Cliffhanger too, with the dad from the Waltons. The Trouble Man reunion everyone was waiting for. Yeah, Robert Hooks was also in Star Trek. He was in the Search for Spock one.
Oh.
I'm guessing none of you are into Star Trek.
No. We're white, but we're not that white.
I like Star Trek, but...
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I'd probably like it if I saw it, but I haven't seen really any Star Trek-related media really ever.
Oh.
It's a blind spot of mine.
Coming to the podcast next year.
Yeah. Oh, that could be fun.
We're gonna watch Enterprise.
We're gonna watch Sector 31, whatever it's called.
There's too much Star Trek now. They overexposed it. Sorry, I go back. Make it something nobody watches.
Yes.
I want 180 episodes of the most boring shit ever. Action stuff. Oh, yeah, anyway, the dice game, it gets knocked over like they predicted. And they chase down a guy, and then not Mr. T, but rather Chalky shoots him in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Despite, for no good reason, it seems. Perhaps a bit suspicious, one might say.
Well, we've seen the switcheroo take place at this point.
Yeah.
Because they switch the guy who's actually doing the robbery, they switch him out with another guy they captured, and he's the one who gets shot in the back.
Yeah. So, and this guy gets shot in the back. I forgot his name. Anyone?
Me too.
Have it noted.
Paulie?
I mean, it's all possible. Sure. Let's go with Pauly. Anyway, he works for Big, the kingpin of the town. I mean, Paul Winfield's small potatoes compared to Big. That's why they call him Big.
Oh, okay.
I guess. I mean, about Julius Harris from Live and Let Die. Assuming we all remember him from that.
Yes.
He's laughing at the train at the end.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one blaxploitation movie Brendan and I had seen.
Yes. James Bond, the blaxploitation hero.
Yeah, the blaxploitation hero we deserve. he's in like Shaft's Big Score and Superfly and Black Caesar and the sequel and Friday Foster, I think, with Pam Grier. That's the lady.
Oh, never heard of her.
Who is also in Mars Attacks with Paul Winfield.
Oh.
I don't know if she ever did Star Trek. But She was on Miami Vice. She did 4 episodes, I think.
3?
No, 1's a double episode, so it depends.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It aired as a 90-minute event, I think, but if you watch it now, it comes as 2 episodes.
Okay.
But yeah, fair enough, 3 episodes. One of them is back-to-back.
We're both right.
And she was banging tubs, I think. Anyway, yeah, so they they blame Mr. T for the killing of, what do we call him, Willie, Petey, whatever, that guy who died.
Polly?
He had a name. That's all we know.
Rest in peace to the homie. Yeah, so they frame him for the murder to get the police involved to just basically give T a shitty time. And it's, he realizes something's fishy, and he goes to Big, and Big is smart enough to understand that, you know, something is weird here. I don't think you just kill this guy for fun.
It's a dumbass plan, really.
I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, well, that's all just more set up to kill Big and frame Mr. T for that murder, too. Yeah, and this is just all, it's all Chalky and the dad from Walton's, I guess, plan to take over the crime syndicate spot in L.A. But, I mean, Mr. T is too cool for that shit. He figures it out. Yeah, it just kind of slowly builds from there. Sort of almost like a film noir.
Yeah,
I think I find it quite noir shaped or whatever.
Yeah, neo noir adjacent.
Yeah,
even though it was made to just be straight up Shaft ripoff.
Oh, he certainly marketed as it.
They even got the guy that wrote Shaft to write this one. Mm. No, I've seen interviews with, I think it was Ivan Dixon, who just said, yeah, we wanted to make a movie just like Shaft.
Yeah, well, they did that.
Yeah.
hard to argue. I'd even argue it's better than Shaft. I thought it was much slicker than Shaft.
It certainly ends on a higher note than Shaft.
It does have, it builds to a really great climax.
Oh, yeah.
Good shootout. I don't even understand. What building was this? It's not a hotel.
There's a theater that he killed a few people at. Then he went to like an apartment complex, I believe, and squibs more people.
Yeah, tricks them with some elevators, and then we get the shot that the poster promises us.
Yeah,
no lies there.
Yeah,
you just shoot up a bunch of mirrors, and we get the shot.
Yeah,
I was like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme. Watching that, I was like, hey.
yeah.
Yeah. For this film, I thought the second act was kind of a snoozer. A lot of talking on the phone. Like, I thought it was, like, all the president's men for a while. Then, once, like, people start killing each other towards the end, it becomes pretty enjoyable. It's like Black Rambo, like Blambo. He goes to town on these people, and there's squibs going off that are totally delicious. There's still some scenes where he's kind of like dodging these pudgy security guards that don't really have that much suspense, because if like you're like dodging somebody who has the physique of me, that's, I don't know, that's not really the most suspenseful thing in the world. But once he starts pulling out the guns and the shotguns and revolvers, it does end on a high note compared to something like Shaft, where, like, if I recall correctly, doesn't Shaft just end with him like squirting people with a fire hose for a little while?
I think he does that. I don't remember if that's like
that
the ending.
Certainly, no. That is part of the climax. He disarms someone with fire hose instead of like shooting them up.
Yeah,
but it's a metaphor, Brandon.
It's a metaphor for his dick.
Yeah.
Well, yes. They did call it Shaft. So.
Good call.
No, I think the finale of Trouble Man is great. Like I said, I think the theme of the movie sort of is winning by keeping your cool. The fucking performance of Robert Hooks at the ending, where you can see him sort of teetering on the edge of losing his cool. Oh, it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, and then why why did he not do any other blaxploitation movies? Like, where's my Trouble Man 2? I want to see
shit. Troubler Man. Yeah, I wouldn't mind
Trouble
that.
Trouble Manor.
Trouble Manor. Okay. Because, although I'm not too enthusiastic about this film due to the second act, I mean, there's potential here for, like, a good movie franchise, you know. It's got, like, all the action you want, but the second act, I don't know, kind of hurt the film for me.
I gotta admit, I saw this over 2 days, I think. So okay. I didn't notice the pace, any pacing issues, because I had a good 12-hour break in the middle between. So, yeah. But no, Rubber Hook never did another blaxploitation movie. Well, he's in Carter's Army. I guess that's like a made-for-TV one. But it's too early. But it's an all-black brigade thing.
Oh.
Except Stephen Boyd. He's white.
Yeah.
White Hercules.
Wait. White Hercules? Isn't that just Hercules?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Is there even a movie called Black Hercules?
Oh, if there's not, there should be. Blurkules or something.
Well, I saw Django Unchained, and they had a different suggestion.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Cut that clip in here. not saying that.
I want to be able to bill him as the Black Hercules.
Black Hercules, isn't that clever?
More like Hercules.
No, I sort of agree with Brandon that the middle part is kind of boring and maybe even convoluted, the bad guys' plan. Mm-hmm. But man, for me, the climax just saved it.
Yeah.
Good heart. It's a banger.
Yeah, I wish it belonged to a more thrilling film overall. Because that climax in the third act, that's kind of what you want to see in a blaxploitation movie. You want to see the squibs and the violence and the over-the-top badassery and machismo, but the middle act, it struggled.
Well, what you want to see is, and I believe this is what Robert Hooks promises, he's getting the honky's ass.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's exactly what he said on the phone, but he says something like that. I'm coming to get you, honky.
Something like that. He just wants to honk an ass, yeah.
I also love that he has a love interest in the film, but then at the end he just drives off with a different woman.
Yeah! The police officer.
It seems like he lives with this love interest almost, and then he sends her away to be safe, and he's like, well, she's away anyway, so might as well get some some side nookie with this coroner's assistant. No, archivist's assistant?
There's yeah, an archivist.
Yeah.
That's Mr. T for you.
Not the Mr. T, the other Mr. T.
The OG T.
The OG T, yes. Mr. T would never do that, the Mohawk one. He's too busy teaching kids how to play softball. He would not be running around with some archivist woman. Totally celibate.
Yeah. I was sort of wondering if he named himself after the lead character in this.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then I started wondering if the band Mr. Big named themselves after the character Mr. Big in this one.
Oh, man. This is like the most influential blaxploitation film of all time.
Yeah.
It's like, it should be on the AFI's 100 list. It's just like pure iconic cinema.
I think we discussed the origin of Mr. T's name in the Mr. T episode, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, his last name does start with T in real life, so Lawrence Tirard. So maybe, maybe not. We'll see.
I like my version better.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the band Mr. Mister just combined the names of Mr. T and Mr. Big. And just took half of it.
We're through the looking glass, people.
Yeah. Do we know anybody called Big T?
Big T. Big T. I know the tall T, but not the big T.
Hmm.
All right. 1 year later, Evan Dix made another movie that got somewhat more attention. Based on a controversial novel as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Spook Who Sat By the Door.
By Sam Greenlee.
I did not read this book. Is this book well known in like the US now, or was it more of a thing of the time?
I really don't know how well known it is because I've never heard of it until I started watching this movie, which is a really good movie. This is much better, in my opinion, than Trouble Man, but get a little ahead of ourselves. But it might be a cult classic, but it was released in like 1969, I believe, after all the turmoil of the 60s and all these famous politicians being assassinated. The author just got all his frustrations out in this book, and it's reflected in the movie. It's just this incendiary, violent, revolutionary polemic, and it is something to behold. It is not like any other blaxploitation film I've ever seen.
No, this is the only one that I could even think of that's like remotely as like overtly in your face political as this is Uptight, it's called, by Jules Dessin. So it's a blaxploitation remake of John Ford's The Informer.
Oh, I have not seen that one.
Yeah, it's written by Ruby Dee, who was like maybe still in the Black Panthers at the time. So, yeah, there's that. But then there's this The Spooker Sat by the Door.
I do believe that the novel is very difficult to get a hold of. Oh. I mean, I checked eBay. It was either very expensive or not at all available.
Mm.
I think most people know the movie more than they know the novel.
Even the movie's not even that easy to get a hold of.
No, that's true.
Yeah, it was allegedly removed from circulation in theaters by the FBI. So they say. I don't know if that's true, but I would not be surprised if it was true. Because this film is pretty much calls for a race war, really. I mean, against, you know, blacks versus whites. Well, it doesn't really call for the race war, but it definitely prepares you mentally and emotionally for what would come. And it's like a how to have a revolution guide in some ways, as he kind of shows these African Americans and the one white guy who thinks he's black how to wage guerrilla warfare. And it goes into this almost like graphic detail on how to make a Molotov cocktail and how to blow up a car. And you're just sitting back watching, you're thinking, man, this stuff is not like any other blaxploitation film I've ever seen. This movie is pissed the hell off. This movie is angry. I kind of like it. It's still relevant in some ways.
I think I'm the exact wrong person to watch this movie, because I was watching it and I was like, oh, this is a great satire.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
This plays like what a conservative white man would have thought would happen if you gave black person a good job.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, you let one of them into the CIA and next thing you know, they're taking over the country.
Oh, yeah. That's a good reading of it. Yeah, I never thought about it that way. But the film totally zigzagged for me. I did not know anything about it prior to watching it. So I watched it, and I was just like, oh, this is going to be Black James Bond. Blames Bond. Okay, I got it. He's going to go on some like overseas mission, blow up some cars and stuff. It's going to be fun. Then he's relegated to being like the printer expert of like the CIA. That's his job. He works like the printer after all this training because the white folk just want to keep him down. And he kind of plays along with the racism there when, like, one of the higher-ups at the CIA is kind of talking about, like, oh, black people, you know, they're just, they have to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And he's just kind of agreeing with them. And you're like, what is this guy thinking actually inside his mind? What is he really, what's his game? Then he turns out he wants to go and be a social worker in Chicago. And then the film kind of, I thought the film was going to zig and it zagged. And I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the part for me is like, because I just didn't understand it. He spends like 6 years at the CIA or something like that. That felt very glanced over. I was like, oh. He's been at the CIA for like 3 months. Oh, he's quitting now, I guess.
Yeah, the time, it's a little weird the way time progresses in the first act and first half of the movie. But once it gets going, and he leaves the CIA, and it kind of finds its footing as this kind of, like, subversive guerrilla warfare film. It really comes into its own and really flourishes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because we have, Lawrence Cook playing...
Is it Freeman?
Dan Freeman.
Yeah.
Yeah, Freeman. Lawrence Cook, he was also in Trouble Man, actually. He plays a small part.
Oh.
Yeah. Did you guys watch them in release order?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I watched The Spook Who Sat by the Door first. So then when I watched Trouble Man, I was like, hey, that's the dude.
Yeah. He's not very... well, like Mr. T, he keeps his cool, but he doesn't look very cool.
Yeah.
He's in this CIA training program, I guess. And we just see everyone else is kind of like a bit of a loudmouth, and he's just like this bookish nerd who fucks prostitutes.
Even though he has a long-term girlfriend, yes.
Yeah, but she lives in a different city, so hosts in different area codes.
Yeah, she's from Chicago, and he's off in like D.C. or whatever.
Yeah, so he just wins out. Everyone else is like, oh, if we all score the same, they have to let us all in. Basically, that's what the other ones are hoping for. Like, if nobody's really great, maybe they have to let us all into the CIA.
Yeah.
But he's just good. Spends his nights in his room reading books.
Mm-hmm.
And even learns judo really fast to beat the racist judo instructor.
So mm-hmm. I did watch a book review of this on YouTube, and in that it was said that he already knew judo.
Yeah, it was said if that he had. They say it later that he'd practiced judo on his own for like 7 years or something.
Yeah, and the prostitute is played by Paula Kelly, and she is also in Trouble Man as Mr. T's girlfriend. The one that he ditches at the end to go with the younger cop lady.
Well, he doesn't ditch her. He just shoots out of town. Again, it's the words of the prophet Ludacris about having hosts in area codes. If they're not in the same area code, it's not cheating.
Yeah,
so it goes back to Chicago and goes to a pool hall again. Ivan Dixon likes his pool halls. And I don't know, finds like a local gangster, I guess, or some kind, and just like, hey, if you really want to stick it to Whitey, let me teach you to do it the best way. and creates a black militia.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. I was not really expecting this really took me for a turn, but I guess it makes sense from a narrative point of view for him to be, you know, learning in the CIA and then turning all the skills of the CIA against white America. And it works really well. I think the training scenes are very, very intense. You know, you just get this feeling like, does this filmmaker actually want this race war in the United States to happen? Is this really something that's gonna, what he's really calling for? This is incendiary, and it's enjoyable on that level that it's just such a fiery, passionate, angry film. And there's some stuff that like prevents it from being all out propaganda. You know, you have like that one character, I forget his name, who kind of tries to talk down Freeman. He's a police officer. He tries to talk down Freeman.
Dawson,
that's it. Yes, Dawson tries to talk down Freeman a little bit. So they have like some debates going on, but in the end, Dawson gets a knife in the gut. So it's who really wins this debate. And in some ways it's still relevant. You know, we still recently in the United States had the Black Lives Matter protests, and we still have issues with racism and corruption, and it still feels pretty hot and relevant in some ways today.
Yeah,
it's still a searing definitely film. Yeah,
especially the riot scene.
Oh yeah, there's that. It just felt like cinema verite a little bit for a while there. And there's some scenes where they just ambush and pretty much just massacre National Guardsmen, and it doesn't matter if they're white or black, because the black ones are just helping the white guys keep the black man down. It gets vicious. Although it is rated PG, so it is for family audiences. So there's that. That's the last thing you see in the entire movie. Rated PG. And I know this was before PG-13. I know that, but it's still kind of funny, you know, today that PG is associated with toddler films. And then you have this like incendiary pro-race war film coming out that's just like has like people being massacred in the streets. It's something. I like to see a mom pop it on for like a little kid. I'm like, hey, here's your race war film. It's appropriate for all audiences.
Yeah, it feels like United Artists didn't actually watch this movie. They just kind of read like, oh yeah, this seems like a fine black exploitation movie. Slapped the PG on it, put it in the cinema, and then like, oh shit, oh right, it's the blueprint for how to do race war. Oh, shit, we should have double checked that.
I do believe that that is actually how it went, sort of, because this played in cinemas for like a week, and then people found out what it was actually about and got pulled by the FBI.
Yeah, then it, I don't even think it has a DVD release. That's like not a like a real one. I've found like a Italian DVD.
Oh yeah, I those aren't real. The Dutch DVD release.
Okay,
it's been released over here. And no race war has started yet, so good for us.
Well, that's because Zwarte Pier has he blessed the Dutch, so you guys are safe. Yeah. There, can you? This is there's a satire for you. Can you have a this race war breaks out in the Netherlands, but it's around Christmas time, so nobody gets killed.
Yeah. Everybody just throws candy.
The happiest race war.
What state do you live in again, Brendan?
Oh, I live in Illinois. But I live in like the cornfields, so it's just kind of not where the race war is going to take place. This is not Chicago area. But, you know, this film does take place in Chicago, which is probably the nearest metropolis to me. And, you know, when you have, like, these images of, like, police and National Guardsmen being gunned down in the streets by guerrillas, you know, it hits hard. I mean, the United States has lots of trouble with race wars, like the Red Summer of 1919, which was just, like, a free-for-all time in the United States of just people killing each other, mainly whites killing blacks, but some acts of self-defense. And the 60s were also a time of great upheaval with all sorts of, like, you had Martin Luther King Jr. being assassinated, and it was just people were losing faith in, like, institutions, and I guess this is one of those films that reflects that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it pretty much just ends mid-race war with, like, Freeman just listening to the radio, and the president is, like, calling a state of emergency because there's race wars are breaking out all across America after he has, I guess, successfully done a race war in Chicago.
Yeah, he's taken off. He's completely taken over Chicago.
Well, we've seen him order his men into other cities to start the same thing up over there. So we already know it's starting in other cities as well.
Yeah, he has agents all over the country. It is kind of my impression of what was happening.
Yeah, and I also thought it was just really, really funny that so his old CIA director, the general, comes to Chicago to figure this shit out, and they're like, who can be behind this? Must be the Russians.
Well,
it's so funny how little credit the black people get from all the white people, and that's part of their plan even.
Oh yeah.
Because at some point they rob like a military storage.
Yeah, military storage installation kind of thing.
Arsenal, and nobody armory. Suspects them. Nobody suspects them because they don't think the blacks are able to organize well enough.
Yeah, that was a really good scene.
Earlier, they do the bank robbery and they get the most white passing black people to dress up as white people and do the robbery. Just be like, oh yeah, wear some like Italian hats and shit. cosplay Frank Sinatra and rob this bank. I was thinking about that earlier when the guy, when he first shows up at the pool hall, the Pretty Willy guy, but like, well, that guy's not black. And but then it points it out and makes a deal out of it, and it's like even the character is like, no, I'm not white passing.
I think he's just a white guy just trying to be associated with the underclass, but I don't know what's going on really.
No, I mean, I've seen a picture of him from later in his life, and then he's got, like, full-on dreads and stuff, so...
Oh, okay.
I think he's just, like, a really pale black guy.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I don't know. He never really... He's not an actor who did a lot of stuff, so it's sort of difficult to get a lot of information racism. On it. Yeah.
Because he was black.
Is it racist if I say that the movie that this reminds me the most of is Conquest for Planet of the Apes?
Okay, I was thinking the same thing and I didn't want to say it, so you said it first.
Because it does build up to the same kind of like overthrowing at the end. Obviously not as, the same, but it does. It's two movies where I can like think of where like which really do end with like the oppressed class kind of rising up and overthrowing the people in charge.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It's stark, and it reminded me of Conquest because you have the fighting in the streets and the perpetual underclass finally rising up and taking matters into their own hands and fighting off their oppressors. And yeah, that's what it reminded me of.
Which movie came first, though?
Conquest is 72.
Ivan Dixon, you hack.
Yeah. Oh, he's copying Planet of the Apes.
That one ends with like a big like anti-war speech, and this one more ends with like a salute to the radio that the race war. Let's go race war.
Yeah, it's probably one of the more pro-war films I've seen. Most films kind of back off, the pro-war, like, oh, we only support war if it's against Nazis. And even then, it's something that should be taken very hard and harshly, and we should not go into this lightly. But this film was just kind of, hey, blacks are mistreated, so time to break out the Molotov cocktails and start killing people. And it reflects the mood of the times, I guess, even though we still have issues with race in the United States. But this really does feel like a cry for help in some ways.
You're telling me now for the first time there's racism in America.
Okay. It's a big cry for help, this film feels like a scream of anxiety and pain. Like, what can we do about the situation? Just the frustration being pent up over all these assassinations and racist Jim Crow laws, that it's just time to take matters into our own hands with this like vigilante justice. That's what it feels like. And it's a really powerful, just angry film that really resonates today. I mean, you wouldn't think that something from like the 70s, like a blaxploitation film from the 70s, would still be powerful in this kind of way, but it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally agree.
Yeah.
And it's open to different interpretations as well, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Like you brought up how it could be seen as like a bit of a satire, you know? And that's fair too, yeah.
Yeah.
Also another great score, Herbie Hancock score in this one.
Yeah.
I did, famous for doing Death Wish. I think that's mm-hmm. Herbie Hancock's main claim to fame, is doing the score for Death Wish. Mm-hmm. You can all agree on that, right?
As far as movies go, yeah.
Well, no, I wouldn't even say that.
Okay, fair enough.
He did Blow Up, and like he has an Oscar nomination.
Okay.
I think it's just that you've seen Death Wish.
Well, to me, Death Wish is the pinnacle of his career, to me at least.
Yeah, he's good. He's no Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you find in some film circles, Michelangelo Antonioni is held slightly higher than Michael Winner.
Pretentious snobs. And I love how Chicago looks in this movie. I mean, they got all their Chicago footage without permits.
Oh, really?
And then the rest of the movie was all shot in Gary, Indiana.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because they thank the mayor of Gary, Indiana in the end credits at the end, don't they? Like, thank you, Gary, for letting us film our incendiary like guerrilla warfare film in your city.
Oh, the mayor was called Gary as well?
No. I mean, no. It's filmed... Okay. I know. Okay, I gotcha. Don't call me Shirley. Oh, yeah, okay, I gotcha. Yeah.
No, and apparently a lot of the cops we see in the movie are real cops from Gary, Indiana. They provided full cooperation. At one point, the police chief just said to Ivan Dixon, hey, we got a helicopter. Do you want to take the camera in the helicopter? So they got a helicopter shot just on the day because the police had a helicopter.
Wow.
And during the riot scene, they used local extras, and the police were actual police that policed those neighborhoods. So Sam Greenlee, the writer of both the book and the screenplay, he recalls that some of them were really into it.
Oh, I believe it.
That's why it looks so real.
Oh, okay. The blood was real. Okay, I gotcha.
Close to it, yeah.
It's kind of interesting how cops would get that into this film, even though this is very anti-cop in some ways. But I guess they want to be on the big screen. So I guess that trumps political beliefs, maybe. Or at least they thought it was going to be something completely different.
It's all they thought it was fun, and then they watched the movie and they're like, whoa, what the fuck? Where the
Editing does magic things, yeah.
We thought it was a really cool movie about cops beating up people.
Yeah, precisely.
Well, and apparently this has been touring in a 4K restoration, so hopefully it will get a proper Blu-ray release or 4K release soon. and it can be watched by more people more easily.
Yeah.
The old DVD is well out of print. Trouble Man, on the other hand, on Blu-ray from Kino.
Oh.
So easy to watch. Go watch that if you want. I don't know. They're both on YouTube if you want to watch them for free. That's how we watched them.
Yes, that is true. And The Spook Who Sat by the Door has been added to the National Film Registry in the United States, the Library of Congress's project. So they kind of apologized, the federal government did, for its suppression of the film. So there's that.
We're sorry we oppressed your film. We put it on this list, but you still can't watch it. But
well,
it's important.
That.
It's important, but don't watch it. just trust us on this one. Important movie, don't need to watch. Not available for you.
Yeah, and apparently it got saved from complete destruction by Ivan Dixon, who put one of the negatives in a vault under a different name.
Oh, clever. Yeah. I wonder what that name was, though. Probably like this I film, a very white sounding title, like. like, guys do the power walk or something like that. I don't know.
And yeah, I think I might be wrong, but I think this is the highest rated blaxploitation movie on Letterboxd.
Really?
I don't know. IMDb is much more difficult to keep order of.
Yeah, I can see that because, you know, Letterboxd often has like a very politically charged community. And this is, needless to say, a very politically charged film. So I can see it resonating with them.
Oh, actually, I can see now. If unless you count Black Dynamite, Black Dynamite has a higher rating.
Okay, that's a fun movie too.
Yeah, but off like the old school, like of the 60s, 70s stuff, it's Spook Us Out by the Door and Uptight, 3 Day Pass, Claudine. I don't know. Is that a real blaxploitation movie? Truck Turner is the highest rated one that we might know of.
Isaac Hayes is in that one, correct?
Yeah, it's yes. Isaac Hayes. Okay. Stars as the titular role. He's shirtless a lot. And it's from the director of The Accused, that Jodie Foster rape movie. Oh, it sounds so weird. Well, why are those two movies directed by the same guy?
No, my DVD cover calls this book the most important black film ever made.
I'm trying to think of something more important from the African-American community, but this film says a lot. It is an important film.
Though I wonder how big its influence was when it was lost for like 30 years or something.
That's true.
I mean, like the CIA, we need to get a token, not finishing yet, sentence from the movie that we can also have some more insight.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing that just... For me, sell the satire aspect of it is that the whole thing starts because there's a politician who needs some extra votes. So in order to appeal to the black vote, he just calls out the CIA for not having any black people on their payroll.
Yeah, he's just trying to manipulate the black vote.
Yeah. Self-interest.
Yeah.
Fake.
Oops. Accidentally started the race war.
Well, gotta start it somehow.
That's how it goes.
Yeah, that's kind of when I thought it was going to be like a black James Bond film. But no, it's something entirely different. It's the anti-James Bond film. Instead of working for the government and like being his enforcer, he's doing his own thing and trying to overthrow the government, basically.
No, you got the black James Bond last week. It was called Black Samurai.
Okay, fair enough.
You got the jack pack and everything.
Yeah. And a name we forgot to mention last week is Steven Spielberg's regular editor, Michael Kahn.
Oh, really?
Was the editor on Black Belt Jones and both of these.
Okay. I thought that name sounded familiar when I saw it in the credits, but you're right. Yeah, I didn't know. Yeah, something else.
Because I think like since... Close Encounters, he did almost every Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
I mean, his resume is half Spielberg.
Yeah, I thought that name sounded familiar when I saw it edited by, and I usually don't notice editors, but I mean, I know Steven Spielberg because he's probably my favorite director. I know that's a normie choice, like everybody's favorite director is Steven Spielberg, but I saw that and I was like, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, same guy. three-time Academy Award winner.
Didn't even know he had a regular guy, to be honest. Too busy paying attention to... Fuck, and I forgot her name. The Martin Scorsese's regular editor, because she's a woman.
Schoonmaker.
I'm just into woke stuff. I don't notice men's credits.
And speaking of woke, I could see the spoke who sat by the door being called woke if it was released nowadays very clearly, because this film is not like a film that like American style conservatives are gonna like sit down and say, oh, let's watch this PG rated film about the race war going on, you know? It's gonna be nice family fun. Oh, they'd be appalled by it, and they still probably are.
We'll see. We'll see if that 4K movie print gets released. And in a Blu-ray, you can go to Blu-ray.com and read the forum posts. Ah, like the good old IMDb message boards.
So, oh, man.
Full of nice people.
Oh, God. Please don't remind me of those. Although I do miss them a little bit, but they were certainly full of trolls.
Yeah, too many trolls.
Putin bots. Yeah, it's wild.
I don't know. The Dark Knight ruined everything. Ruined I blame the Dark Knight. Christopher Nolan, it's your fault. It ruined fandoms. Maybe. I mean, Star Wars was there, but when did Star Wars fans ever overreact to anything?
Everything reaped their childhood.
They never told any actors to kill themselves because they didn't like the character or anything. They're just chill people. Anyway, I guess that wraps it up on...
on that note.
On the Ivan Dixon cinematic output.
So The Spook Who Sat by the Door, I would definitely recommend if you're looking for something different from your typical blaxploitation film. It's a lot angrier, a lot more pissed off, and it's definitely a violent film that will be enjoyed by like people who want to see something very politically charged in today's environment. But Trouble Man, not really my thing except for the climax, so you can kind of take that or leave it in my opinion, but The Spook Who Sat by the Door is one you got to see.
Spook Who Sat by the Door, yeah, absolutely see it. It is a movie that transcends the blaxploitation genre and deserves to be seen by more people.
Yeah.
I mean, I really dug Trouble Man. I mean, watch Trouble Man, but, you know, pause it at like the 45-minute mark and take a day's break.
Fair call.
My recommended viewing. I don't know. Maybe it's good if you watch it in one sitting too. But yeah, Robert Hooks, great. The soundtrack, great. Climax, great. And the rest is vibes.
Yeah. Fully agree. I would also say maybe just check out Sam Greenlee on YouTube, because that is just an angry, intelligent black man who doesn't really filter his words or his thoughts, and it's great. He's a lot of fun to listen to. He thinks Barbershop is a very important black movie, and he calls John Singleton a hoe. He's great.
Area code did John Singleton stay?
Hollywood. Everybody that goes to Hollywood is a hoe, according to Sam Greenlee.
He is also dead for a decade.
Yeah, okay, but YouTube is old.
YouTube remembers.
Yeah. He has a great quote of like, yeah, nowadays you can just make a movie for $1 million. Hell, if somebody gave me $1 million, I'd make free.
Hey.
I love his energy.
I mean, it seems
Albert Pune would have made five, I know.
I don't know. It seems more in Hollywood now. They can barely make a movie for under $300 million, so.
Yeah, but he calls everybody in Hollywood a hoe.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next week we'll be back with another wood. When we are going to go to Uganda and check out the movies of Wakaliwood, or at least the three that are available. And I don't know, we'll tell you more about what we mean by that when we come back next time.
Looking forward to it.
So, yeah, check out the website and the Patreon, where you can learn about our favorite movies of last year, hopefully, by the time this goes up.
Yeah, join the Discord.
Yeah, check out the website to see the new edition of the top 250 action movies of all time.
Yes, thank you.
No, I love it.
The
number one choice is Aces.
Number 71 will shock you. Well, bye for now.
Right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Look, man, I am tired of that. I am not passing. I am black. Do you hear me, man? Do you understand? I am black. I'm a nigga. You understand me? I was born black. I live black. And I'm gonna die probably because I'm black. Because some cracker that knows I'm black better than you, is probably gonna put a bullet in the back of my head.
Please, dude. You're barely even brown.
No, he didn't mean that.
Compared to me, you look like Matthew Perry.